Cinders. Hell, they half of her. Part of that boy rib, too. All bad blood. Fuck the skin. His voice is so high by the end of it that I can hardly hear him over the television. Over an enthusiastic car salesman whose prices are miraculously dropping. Maggie's mouth is a seam. Her hands worrying one another. And suddenly I hate her because she can walk. And my mama can't. And then I hate Joseph because he's called my daddy a boy. I wonder what he knows of my daddy. How he could look at Pop and see every line of Pop's face. Every step Pop takes. Every word out of Pop's mouth. And see anything but a man. Pop's at least 20 years older than Big Joseph. He was a grown man when Big Joseph was pissing his diapers. So how can Big Joseph see Pop? See how stone-like he is? Like Pop's taken all the hardship of the world into him and let it calcify him inch by inch till he's like one of them petrified trees and see anything but a man. Pop would whoop his ass. And I can see Big Joseph in my mind's eye. Standing over Given, breathing down on him like he's so much roadkill. How would he ignore the perfection of him? The long bow-drawing arm, the high forehead over the dead eyes. God damn it, Daddy! Michael says. Quick as he fell into the chair, Big Joseph is up, walking toward us, but facing Michael. I told you they don't belong here. Told you never to sleep with no nigger, bitch. Michael headbutts Big Joseph. The crack of their skulls ricochets through the air. And Big Joseph's nose is gushing blood. And then him and Michael are on the floor, but Michael isn't punching him. They're pushing against each other, each trying to pin the other down. Rolling like children. Breathing hard. Sweating. Maybe crying. Michael saying over and over. God damn it, Daddy! God damn it, Daddy! And Big Joseph saying nothing but wheezing so hard, it sounds like sobbing.
Enough!
Maggie screams.
That's enough!
And then she's running away and I can't believe she's going to leave them fighting in the kitchen. But then she's running back with a broom. And beating Michael over the shoulders with it because he's on top of Big Joseph now, yelling,
Get up! Get up!
And I still feel sick and cold and too small for all this. And part of me wants to go grab Jojo's hand and pull them out of this house and leave them fighting. And another part of me wants to open my mouth and laugh because it's all so ridiculous. All of it. And I look over at my son, and I think for sure he's smiling. For sure he can see how stupid all of it is. But he ain't looking at them tussling. He's looking at me. And I see a flash of something I ain't never seen before. He's looking at me like I'm a water moccasin, and I just bit him. Just sank my teeth into the bone of his ankle. Bit it to swelling, like he would step on my head, crush my skull, stomp me into the red mud until I was nothing but bone and skin and mud oozing in my slits. Like he ain't no child of mine. Michaela's climbing her brother, getting higher and higher on him until she's almost sitting on his shoulder. So I do it. I stalk over and grab Jojo's hand, even though I half expect him to yank it away, and I pull him toward the door.
Nice meeting y'all,
I say, and it sounds high-pitched and ridiculous coming out of my mouth, with the men still tussling and Maggie still whacking. Big Joseph's on top now, choking Michael. And even though I want to go back and help Michael, I don't. I open the door and pull Jojo and Michaela. I take one look back and see Michael punch his daddy in the throat. Then we're out the door
and the sky in the kill is wide and open and cold, awash in stars. And we down the porch steps, standing by the car, shivering, listening to the banging in the house. A crash, and a light goes out. "Get in," I say. And Jojo climbs in the back seat with Michaela. "Fit," Michaela lisps, and it sounds like fit. "Don't say that," I say. We sit in the car in the dark, with the first of the crickets and katydids that come alive in the warmer months, and listen to them trill, protesting the frigid air, the unfeeling stars, and we wait. It's minutes, or it's hours. Could be days, too, and maybe we slept through the sunrise and sunset, and woke to the night, again and again, and them still, rolling and breaking things inside. Daddy and son. Until Michael and his mama come out the door, Michael kicking right through the screen, Maggie rushing out behind him to grab his shoulders, to turn him to her, to yell at him, then talk to him, then murmur. Michael leans down toward his mother and breaths until he's hunched over her, his head on her shoulder, her rubbing his back like a baby, her robe turning black where he brushes against it, blood dabbed from his touch. Michael's sobbing then, the bugs quiet. "We should have left," Jojo whispers. "Shut up," I say. "Kayla's still hungry," Jojo says. "I should leave. I should leave Michael to his family. Take my daughter home and feed her. Fill her stomach. Quiet her whimpering. But I don't. I can't." Maggie pulls the door open, disappears inside, and I expect Michael to walk toward the car, but he doesn't. He just leans over and crosses his arms and puts them on the porch railing and hunches over. Waiting. His mother opens the door again and almost hits him, and then she's passing him a paper grocery bag and hugging him to her and talking to him again. And with each word, she thumps his back with the flat of her hand. And he's a baby again. And it looks like she's trying to burp him. I look down at my lap, out the driver's side window, off into the far line of the woods. There's a sound of a door slamming shut, and then a creak, and Michael's opening the car and sliding into the passenger seat. The bugs loud, and then dim again. The bag crackles. "Are you okay?" I ask. I know it's stupid, but still, this is what I say. "Let's go," Michael says. The car chokes and cranks to life. I drive slowly down the driveway, swerving around muddy potholes, the bugs scatting our way. When I turn onto the street, the house is all dark. All the windows dim, the siding and beams and glass of the front of it smooth and still as a blank face. Pop is home when I turn into the gravel drive. He's sitting on the porch, still as the swing and the potted plants at both sides of the door. He's cut the light off so he is a darkness in the darkness, and the only reason I know it's him is by the way he flicks his lighter to life, and then releases it, lets it flutter, and then he flicks it again. He smoked when I was younger, packed and rolled the cigarettes himself, but after he caught me around the back of the shed lighting one of his spent cigarettes with only a fingernail's worth of tobacco in it, he slapped it and the match out of my hand, and I never saw nor smelled the scent of one on him again. The way he looked at me when the cigarette hit the ground, eyes wide, disappointed, pained. It was the first time I remember Pop looking at me like that. I was 11, and my breasts were budding, and my friends at school were already smoking weed and worse, so I wanted to try at least a cigarette. But recalling his face, the way he looked guilty and angry at the same time, made me wish I'd never picked up that bud of rolled tobacco, never stole that match, never lit it, never hid back there for Pop to catch me. So now, whenever Pop is thinking about something but doesn't want to let anyone know he's thinking about something, worrying it over, he does this. Light. Gutter. Light. Gutter. Where I was the one hesitant in the kill, now it's Michael that stands at my elbow, slumped, curled in on himself, like I got a cur dog on a short, frayed leash. He tries to grab Michaela out of the car, but by the time he gets around to her side, Jojo is out and Michaela is patting his face, saying, "Ee-ee," with every little tap. And they are already walking toward Pop in the darkness. Michael and I grab bags, so by the time we get up the porch steps, Michaela is disentangling herself from Pop's arms, and Jojo is carrying her into the house. Here, Pop is a dusky smudge, the tattoos on his arms lit up in a flash with the lighter, and then out again. When I was younger, I would sneak and stand next to him when he took a nap on the couch, smell his breath, the way it smelled of tobacco and mint and musk. And I would trace over his tattoos with my pointer finger, without touching him, just follow the illustrations around. A ship, a woman who looked like Mama, clothed in clouds and carrying arrows, and a pine branch in her hand. And two cranes, one for me and one for Given. Givens is a light, poised in flight, feet skimming the marsh grass, while mine is beak down in the mud. When I was 5, Pop pointed at mine and told me, "This the one I got for you. They a sign of luck when you see them. Mean everything is in balance, that it's raining good and there's fish, and there's things squirming under the marsh mud, that the bayou grass going to be green soon. They're a sign of life." The light gutters, and they are erased in the dark. Pop speaks, and I see his teeth. "Your mama been asking about you." "Sir," Michael says. I feel the words as much as I hear them, hot puff of air that caresses my shoulder. "Michael," Pop says. He clears his throat. "I expect it's good to be home." "Yes, sir." "Your mama..." Pop's voice breaks off. "We get in a place," Michael interrupts. "Soon." Pop lights and his face flashes. He is frowning, and then the flame dies. The night is country dark. "It'll keep until tomorrow," Pop rises. "Leonie, go on and see your mother." Mama is lying in the bed with her face turned to the wall, and her chest is still. The bones from the spoon of her clavicle close and hard under the skin. A rusted cooking grate over a busted barbecue pit. Her arms are all bone, the skin and thin muscle overlaying them, sliding to bunch at odd places. Too far away from the elbow, too near the center of her throat. She swallows, and I feel relief wash through me. And I realize I was watching to see if she was breathing, to see if she was moving, to see if she was still here. It's like a quick rain over hot, dry earth. "Mama?" Her head moves an inch, and then one more, and then she's looking at me, her eyes too alive in her face. The pain glistens in her black irises, moves like smoke over the whites. The only thing bright while the rest of her dulls.
Water,
she asks. It's a scratchy whisper, hardly there in the din of the night insects trilling through the open window. I lift the cup and straw Pop left next to the bed for her to drink. I should have been here. Michael's home, I say. She tongues the straw out of her mouth and swallows, lays her head back, her hands curled on the thin white blanket like an invalid's.
It's time.
What? I say. Mama clears her throat, but her whisper is no louder. Two long pant hymns dragging over dirt.
It's time.
For what, Mama?
For me to go.
What you mean? I set the cup down on the edge of the nightstand.
This pain.
She blinks as if to grimace, but doesn't.
If I lay in this bed for much longer, it's going to burn the heart out of me.
Mama?
I done did everything I could. Brewed all the herbs and medicines. Opened myself to the mystere. For St. Jude. For Marie Laveau. For local. But they can't answer. The body won't let him,
she says. Her knuckles bear all the scars, slipped knives, broken dishes, pounds of laundry. I wonder if I pull her hand to my nose and sniff, if I can smell all the offerings she done placed on her altar over the years, done used to heal. Strings of peppers, potatoes, yams, cattail, spider lily, Spanish needle, sweet bedstraw, and wild okra. All the green of the earth in her hands. But when I sniff, her palms sandpaper dry, I smell threshed hay bleached by the winter sun. Dead. She squeezes, and it is pitiful. When I was a little girl, she kneaded my scalp when she washed my hair, scraped it with her fingernails as I sat in the tub with my knees in my chin. I want to cry. I don't know what she's saying to me.
I got one left, she says.
What do you mean?
The last mystère. My mom, Brigitte. Let her come into me. Possess me. She, the mother of the dead. The judge. If she come, maybe she'd take me with her.
There ain't another? What about one that heals? I ask.
I didn't teach you enough. You won't be able to appease them.
I could try. I let the words trail from my mouth and hang in the air like lax fishing line, dangling a hook nothing wants to bite. The night bugs call one to another, courting and threatening and singing, and I can't understand any of it. Mama looks at me, and for one blink, hope shines, remote and brilliant as a full moon.
No, she says. You don't know. You ain't never met the mystère. They look at you. They see a baby.
I take my hand from hers and she lays still, her eyes too wet, too large, eyelids fluttering. She don't ever blink.
You can gather for me. I need rocks from the cemetery. Enough to stack them in a pile in cotton.
I want to walk out the room, walk out the front door, walk straight to the bayou, to the water, step on it, shimmering glass under my soles, and walk until I disappear over the horizon. Cornmeal and rum. That's it? You just going to go? Soon as you seek this spirit, just like that? My voice breaks. My face is wet.
Why can't Pop do it?
I ask.
You my baby.
She breathes heavy in the grate, cracks and sinks to rusted stillness.
Like I drew the veil back so you could walk in this life. You'll help me draw it back so I can walk in the next.
Mama, no.
Help me prepare.
She sighs wetly then, and I reach out to wipe her face, the skin under the tears warm and wet. And alive with salt and water and blood.
I don't want to be empty breath. Bitter at the marrow of my bones. I don't want that, Leonie.
Mama.
The cup falls off the table. Spreads a puddle of water around my shoes. The katydids clack in applause or disapproval. I don't know.
Baby, please,
Mama says, her eyes wild and wide. She moans, and what could be the pain moves through her, making her legs shuffle under the covers, then lay still. Rough wind through bare winter branches. The morphine is not enough.
Let me leave with something of myself. Please.
I nod, and then her scalp is under my hands, hot to the touch, and I'm kneading and scratching like she did me, and her mouth is opening and closing in half pleasure, half pain, opening and closing with what would be sobs, but she chokes them quiet. Relief again. But this time like a flood over dry plains, rushing from where I touch her head down her gaunt face, her sinewy neck, her flattened etched chest, the dip of her stomach, the empty pot of her hips, the long, swollen black lines of her legs, to her flat feet. I wait, but nothing about her body changes. I expect her to lie slack, but it doesn't happen. I only know she's fallen asleep by her eyelids, the smooth marbles of them relaxed. I leave her and pull the door behind me. Michael's in the shower. Pop is still out on the porch, flashing in the darkness. Someone has turned a lamp on in the living room, and given pictures, year after year, of half-smiles and angled legs like he's a moment away from jumping and running, look down on me. A multitude of givens. And I want him back so bad then, because I want to ask him,
what should I do?
Michaela's on the second sofa in the living room. Michaela breathes open-mouthed, huffing crumbs, and a half-eaten cracker falls from her hand to the floor. I don't even pick it up. In my room, my full bed seems as small and narrow as Mama's, and like her, I turn to the wall. I can feel her on the other side. She sears me. I couldn't see it before, but now I feel it. Her chest packed tight with wood and charcoal, drenched in lighter fluid, empty no longer. The pain, the great blaze, immolating all.
Chapter 11, JoJo. I pulled Kayla out and ran to the porch, to Pop and his lighter, bright as a lighthouse beacon as it flashed in the dark. I skipped the steps and leapt up to the porch, coming to a fast stop in front of Pop like the rabbits that creep around the house when the sun sets, eating, stilling, then running only to freeze again, saying to me, so delicious, but still, yes, I see you, calling to one another, run, 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 halt! Son, Pop says, and grabs the back of my neck, his hand large and warm, my wrists feel raw. My mouth comes open and I breathe in. It sounds like a web of phlegm is in my throat. My eyes are burning and I shut my jaw and clench my teeth and try and try and try not to cry. I breathe again and it sounds like a sob, but I will not cry, even though I want to duck down with Kayla, want Pop to fold me in his arms and hug me to him, want to smash my nose in his shoulder so hard I can't breathe, but I don't. I feel his hand on me and rise on my toes so he presses harder. I can feel the heat on his fingers. He lets his hand run down my back to rest atop my spine, and I even imagine I can feel the whirl of his fingertips, the blood push back under his skin. Pop, I say. Pop shakes his head, gives my back a little rub. Go put your sister to sleep. We'll talk about it tomorrow. Me and Kayla eat crackers and pimento cheese and some smothered chicken legs Pop got in the skillet on the stove. Wash it down with water. I think about putting Kayla in the tub, but then I hear the shower. And when I hear Mam's and Leonie's voices in the room and see Pop's lighter flash on the porch, I know it's Michael. Kayla lays her head on my shoulder, grabs my hair, rolls my curls around her fingers like a noodle. Mam? Pop? Her breathing gets slow. And then she's slobbering on my throat, and I know she's asleep. But I don't put her down because I'm looking at Richie, who's looking at Pop, who's looking out to the black yard, the far road. The boy's face shows in fire, and I ain't never seen that look before. Ain't never seen somebody look at someone else like Richie looks at Pop. All the hope in his face, plain in the circle of his mouth. His wide open eyes, the wrinkle on his forehead. He stepped closer and closer to Pop. And he's a cat then, fresh-born, milk hungry, creeping towards someone he'd die without. I lay Kayla down on the sofa and step out onto the porch. Richie follows. Riv, he says. Pop flicks his light, lets it die, and flicks it again. Riv, Richie says again. Pop pulls phlegm up his throat, spits off the porch, looks down at his hands. It was quiet here without y'all. Pop says, too quiet. The light of flame shows his quick smile, and then it's gone. I'm glad y'all back. I didn't want to go, I say. I know, Pop says. I rub my wrist and look at Pop's profile flare and fade in the light. Did you find it? Pop asks. Richie takes a step forward, and the look changes. Just a flicker. He glances between me and Pop, and he frowns. The back? I say. Yeah, Pop says. I nod. Did it work? It's a gree-gree bag. I shrug. I think so. We made it, got stopped by the police, though, and Kayla was sick the whole time. Pop flicks the lighter. The flame blazes for one half of a second. The fire bright and cold and orange, and then sparks out. Pop shakes the lighter by his ear and lights it again. Why can't he see me? Richie asks. It was the only way I could send a little of me with y'all. With Ma'am. Pop clears his throat. Sick. And that being a place I can't go back to. Parchment. Richie is inches away from Pop. I can't even nod. See your face every day? Like the sun, Richie says. Pop pockets the lighter. You left me, Richie says. I slide closer to Pop. Richie reaches out a hand to touch Pop's face and sweeps his finger across his eyebrows. Pop sighs. You better watch out, boy. He used to look at me like that, Richie says. His teeth are white and the black, tiny and sharp as a kitten's. And then he left me. I have to talk against the pockets of silence he creates whenever he speaks. The bug shushed for him with every word. Does she feel any better, Pop? Pop searches in his pocket for something and then stops. Sometimes I forget. I forget I don't smoke, he says. He shakes his head in the darkness. I can hear the slide of his hair against the wall of the house he sits against. She got worse, son, Pop says. You was the only daddy I ever knew. Richie's voice was soft as a mew. I need to know why you left me. Richie is quiet. So is Pop. I slide down the wall and sit next to Pop on the porch. I want to lay my head on his shoulder, but I'm too old for that. It's enough to feel his shoulder rub mine when Pop passes a hand over his face, when he begins to flip the lighter over and under his knuckles like he does sometimes with knives. The trees murmur around us, nearly invisible in the black. When I hear Leonie come walking out of Mam's room, breathing as hard and as deep as if she'd been running, pulling in her breaths like it hurt, I look up at the glittery sky and search for the constellations Pop taught me. The unicorn, I say as I identify it. Monoceros. The rabbit. Lepus. The great snake. Hydra. The bull. Taurus. I learned the proper names from a school library book. I know Leonie must be looking out at the porch, wondering what me and Pop are doing in the dark. The twins, I say. Gemini. Leonie's room door opens and shuts, and I see Michael, baby, and Leonie when she was sick. I see the way Leonie didn't do nothing when that cop put those handcuffs on me. Richie looks at me like he knows what I'm remembering, and then he sits across from us, curls over his knees, wraps his arm around his back, makes a sound like crying, and rubs what he can reach of his shoulder blades. My wounds were here, right here, from Black Annie. And you healed them. But you left and now you won't see me. I lay my head on Pop's shoulder anyway. I don't care. Pop breathes deeply and clears his throat like he wants to say something, but he doesn't. But he doesn't shrug me away. You forgot about the lion, Pop says. The trees sigh. When we go inside to lay down, Richie still sits, no longer rubbing. Instead, he rocks back and forth, faintly, and the look on his face is broken. Pop shuts the door. I curl around Kayla on the sofa and try to lie still, to forget the broken bar on the porch long enough to drift to sleep. My spine, my ribs, my back, a wall. Jojo, she says, and pats my cheeks, my nose, pulls open my eyelids. I jump and wake and fall off the sofa, and Kayla laughs, bright and yellow and shiny as a puppy that just got the knack of running without tripping over her own legs. Happy like that. My mouth tastes like I've been sucking on chalk and licking oyster shells, and my eyes feel grainy. Kayla claps her hands and says, "Eat, eat." And it's then I realize that I smell bacon, and I realize I ain't smelled it ever since Mam got too sick to cook. I sling Kayla on my back and she clings. I think it's Leonie. And I feel something in me soften for a minute. Rethink all the bad I thought about her the night before. And something inside me say, but she do. She do. And then I step into the narrow kitchen and it ain't her. It's Michael. He got a shirt on that looked like it's been washed and dried a size too small. The letters on it faded. It's one of mine. An old one man bought me to wear one Easter. He look all wrong at the counter, the way he reflect too much of the morning light. Y'all hungry? He asks. Nah, I say. Yes, Kayla lisps. Michael frowns at us. Sit down, he says. I sit, and Kayla climbs up on my shoulder, straddles my neck, and beats my head like a drum. Michael takes the pan off the gas, sets it to the side. He lets the fork he was turning the bacon with drip at his side, drip oil on the floor, as he turns to face us. He crosses his arms, the oil drips again, the bacon is still sizzling, and I wish he would take it out and drain it so me and Kayla can eat it hot. You remember that time we went fishing? I shrug, but the memory comes anyway, like someone pouring a bottle of water over my head. Just the boys, he told Leonie, and she looked at him like he jabbed her in her softest parts. And I thought he reneged then, say I'm just joking, but he didn't. It was late, but we went out to the pier anyway and cast lines. He called me son, with his fingers, with the way he tied the sinkers and speared the bait. Laughed at me when I couldn't spear the worm, when I wouldn't touch them. Michael waves his fork at me, and he knows I'm lying. He knows I remember. We're gonna have more of that now. He told me a story that night. As the fishermen gigged for flounder with their lights and their nets, he said, "What you know about your Uncle Given?" And I told Michael that Mam had showed me his pictures, talked about him, told me he wasn't here no more, that he was in another world, but hadn't told me what that meant. I told Michael that because it was true, and because I wanted him to tell me what she meant. I was 8 then. That's what me coming home means. Michael pokes the bacon. That night on the dock, he didn't tell me how or why Uncle Given left. Instead, he told me about working out on the rig, how he liked working through the night so when the sun was rising, the ocean and the sky were one thing, and it felt like he was in a perfect egg. How the sharks were birds, like hawks hunting the water. How they were drawn to the reef that grew up around the rig. How they struck under the pillars, white in the darkness, like a knife under dark skin. How blood followed them, too. How the dolphins would come after the sharks left, and how they would leap from the water if they knew anyone was watching, chattering. How he cried one day after the spill, when he heard about how all of them was dying off. "For you and your sister," Michael says, and lifts the piece of bacon he's been poking at. It's already maroon and stiff, but he drops it back in the greaves anyway. "I actually cried," Michael told the water. He seemed ashamed to say that, but he went on anyway. How the dolphins were dying off, how whole pods of them washed up on the beaches in Florida and Louisiana and Alabama and Mississippi. Oil burnt, sick with lesions, hollowed out from the insides. And then Michael said something I'll never forget. "Some scientists for BP said this didn't have nothing to do with the oil. That sometimes this is what happens to animals. They die for unexpected reasons. Sometimes a lot of them. Sometimes all at once." And then Michael looked at me and said, "And when that scientist said that, I thought about humans. Because humans is animals." And the way he looked at me that night told me he wasn't just thinking about any humans. He was thinking about me. I wonder if Michael thought that yesterday, when he saw that gun, saw that cop push me down so I bowed to the dirt. Michael lifts out the bacon and drops it on the paper towel. That night on the pier, it was as if the pull of the moon on the water, the surge of the tide, drew the words from Michael. He said, "My family ain't always did right. It was one of my dumbass cousins that killed your Uncle Given." I didn't think Michael was telling me the whole story. Whenever Leonie or Mam or Pop talked about how Given died, they said, "He got shot." But Michael said something different. "Some people think it was a hunting accident." He wound up his line and got ready to cast again. "One day I'll tell you the whole story," he said. Now the faint smell of charred bacon wafts through the air, and Michael pulls out another piece, this one curled black and hard. Kayla claps and pulls at my hair in bunches, the same way she does grass. "I just want you and Michaela to know that I'm here. I'm here to stay, and I miss y'all." Michael pulls out the bacon and puts it on the plate. It's all black and burnt at the edges. Char and smoke fill the room. He runs to the back door and opens and closes it, trying to wave out the smoke. The grease hisses to silence. I don't know what he wants me to say. "We call her Kayla," I say. I pull Kayla up over my head and set her in my lap. "No, no, no, no," Kayla says and starts kicking. My scalp burns. I bounce her on my knees, but that just pisses her off. She straightens like an ironing board and slides off my legs onto the floor. Her whine escalates until it's like a police siren. Michael shakes his head. "That's enough, young lady. Get up off the goddamn floor," he says, His door waving ain't doing too much. Kayla shrieks. I kneel next to her, bend over, put my mouth next to her ear, and speak loud enough for her to hear me. I know you mad. I know you mad. I know you mad, Kayla. But I'm gonna take you outside later, okay? Just sit up and eat, okay? I know you mad. Come here. Come here. I say this to her because sometimes I hear words between her howls. Hear her thinking, why don't he listen? Why don't he listen? I feel. I put my hands under her armpits, and she squirms and wails. Michael lets the door slam, walks toward us, and then stops. If you don't get up off that floor right now, I'm gonna whip you, you hear? You hear me, Kayla? Michael says. He's turning red around his eyes and his throat as he waves his arm in the air, and the smoke just follows him like a blanket he's wrapped around himself. This makes him redder. I don't want him to hit her with the fork. Come on, Kayla, come on, I say. God damn it, Michael says. Michaela! And then he's hunching over the both of us, and his arm whips out, whips in, and he's dropped the fork, and he's smacking Kayla hard on the thigh, once and twice, his face as pale and tight as a knot. What did I say? He punctuates each word with a slap. Kayla's mouth is open, but she's not wailing. All of her seized up silent, eyes wide from the pain. I know this cry. I swing her up and away from Michael's hand, spin her around into me. Her back under my rubbing hand, hot. My shushes don't mean nothing. I know what's coming. She lets go of the breath in one long thunderous wail. You ain't have to do that, I tell Michael. He's backing away, shaking his spanking hand like it's gone numb. I told her, he says. You ain't, I say. Y'all don't listen, Michael says. Kayla writhes and shrieks, her whole body coiling. I turn my back on Michael, run out the back door. Kayla rubs her face into my shoulder and screams. I'm sorry, Kayla. I say like I'm the one hit her. Like she can hear over her crying. I walk around the backyard with her, saying it over and over until the sun hits higher in the sky, bearing down on us, turning the muddy puddles into vapor, burning the land dry, and burning me and Kayla, her to peanut butter, me to rust. I apologize until she quiets to hiccups, until I know she can hear me. And I'm waiting, waiting for her small arms to fold around my neck, her head to drop to my shoulder, and I'm so intent on waiting for it that I don't even see the boy staring at us from the shadow of a tall, mini-armed pine tree until Kayla's pinching my arm, saying, no, no, Jojo. In the bright light of the day, the shadow swallows him. Cool, dark bayou water, the color of mud, tepid and blinding. He moves and he is of a piece with the darkness. He's slopping a peach, yo pop. I blow air hard out of my nose, hope it would mean nothing to him. That he would not read it as wanting to talk. That he would not read it as not wanting to talk. He don't see me. How come he don't see me? I shrug. Kayla says, eat, eat, Jojo. All's quiet in the house. And for a stupid second, I wonder why Leone and Michael ain't arguing about him hitting Kayla. And then I remember, they don't care. You got to ask him about me, Richie says. He steps out of the shadow, and he is a swimmer surfacing for air, glistening in the light. And in the light, he's just a skinny boy, too narrow in the bones, the fat that should be on him starved off. Somebody that I can feel sorry for until his eyes widen, and I squeeze Kayla so hard she cries out. The face he pulls is pinched with hunger and longing. I shake my head. It's the only way I can go, Richie stops, looks up in the sky. Even if he don't know me no more, don't care about me, I need the story to go. His afro is so long it sprouts from his head like Spanish moss. The snake bird says. What? I say and regret it. It's different here, he says. So much liquid in the air, salt. And a mud smell, I can tell, he says. The other waters is near. I don't know what he's talking about, Kayla says. Inside, Jojo, inside. Richie looks at me like he's seeing me the way I seen him. Like Pop looks at a hog at slaughtering time, measuring the meat. He nods. You get him to tell you the story when I'm there, he says. No, I say. No, he says. No. Kayla is making little mewling sounds pulling at my ears. I want to eat, Jojo, she says. It's enough we brought you back, brought you here. What if Pop don't want to tell that story? What if it's something he don't want to say? Don't matter what he want, it matter what I need. I jiggle Kayla, turn in a circle, my feet sinking in the muddy grass. A cow lows nearby and I hear. Cool and becoming of green things it is, all the new grass. I stop my spin when I see his fierce eyes again. If I get the story, you're gonna leave, right? You're gonna go away? My voice edging up to a question, high as a girl's. I clear my throat. Kayla pulls my hair. I told you I'm going home, Richie says. He takes a step before me but parts no grass, squelches no mud, and his face is furrowed, a piece of paper crumpled over on itself, a smudged ball hiding words. You ain't answer. Yes, he says. He's not specific enough. If he has skin and bones, I'd throw something at him. Pick up the corner of a cinder block at my feet and hurl it. Make him say it. But he's not, and I don't want to give him a cause to change, to stay lurking around the house, around the animals, stealing all the light, reflecting it back wrong, a warped mirror. Casper, the black shaggy neighborhood mutt, lopes around the corner of the house, freezes in a stop and barks. You smell wrong, I hear. Snake coming through water. The quick bite. Blood. Richie walks backward into the shadows, his hands palms out. Fine, I say. I let Casper's bark turn me around. Know the dog is keeping him pinned to the tree, so I can jog up the steps into the house, even as I feel Richie's eyes tightening up my shoulders. A line pulled taut between us, razor sharp. The bacon is sitting on a plate lined with paper towels. I put Kayla on the table and pick the meat apart, peeling away what's still a little gummy, still a little brown. I hand the meat to her, bit by bit, to eat. She eats so much I'm left with the charred pieces. I can't even eat them, so I spit it all out and make us peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. Michael and Leonie are in her room, the door closed, conversation a muffled purr. Ma'am's room is still dark. Her blinds closed. I walk in and open them, put the box fan in the window, turn it to a low hum. The air moves. Kayla marches around Mam's bed, singing one of her nonsense songs. Mam stirs, her eyes open to slits. I get her water from the faucet in a straw, hold it up to her so she can drink. She holds the water in her mouth longer than she should, puffing out her cheeks in a balloon, works her way up to swallowing, and when it's down, her face breaks like drinking that water hurt. Ma'am, I say, pulling a chair up to her bed, propping my chin on my folded fists, waiting for her to put a hand on my head like she always does. Her mouth quivers to a frown, and she doesn't. I sit up, ask a question, and hope that it covers the pain behind my ribcage, which moves like a puppy's turning in circles to settle in sleep. How you feeling? Not good, baby. She speaks in a whisper. I can hardly hear her over Kayla's gibberish song. The medicine ain't working? Guess I'm getting used to it, she huffs. The pain pulling all the lines of her face down. Michael's back, I say. She raises her eyebrows. I realize it's a nod. I know. He ate Kayla this morning. Ma'am looks straight at me then, not at the ceiling or off into the air. And I know she done shrugged off her pain as well as she can, and she's listening to me, hearing me the same way I hear Kayla when she's upset. I'm sorry, she says. I sit up straight back this pop and frown. No, she says. You old enough to hear this. Ma'am? Shh. I don't know if it's something I did, or if it's something that's in Leonie. but she ain't got the mothering instinct. I knew when you was little and we was out shopping and she bought herself something to eat and ate it right in front of you and you was sitting there crying hungry. I knew then. Ma'am's fingers is long and thin, little more than bone, cool to the touch, but I can still feel warmth like a small flame in the middle of her palm. I never wanted you to be hungry, JoJo. It's why I tried. I would do it if she wouldn't, but now... It's all right, ma'am. Hush, boy. Her fingernails used to be pink and clear. Now they seashells, salt-pitted and yellow. She ain't never gonna feed you. Her hands used to be muscle plump from all the work she did in the gardens, in the kitchen. She reaches out and I duck my head up under it so her palm on my scalp and my face in her sheets and I breathe it all in, even though it hurts. And it smells like metal and sunburned grass and awful. I hope I fed you enough while I'm here so you can carry it with you like a camel. I can hear the smile in her voice, faint, a baring of teeth. Maybe that ain't a good way of putting it. Like a well, JoJo. Pull that water up when you need it. I cough into the blanket, partly from the smell of ma'am dying, partly from knowing that she's dying. It catches in the back of my throat. I know it's a sob, but my face in the sheets, nobody can see me cry. Kayla's patting my leg, her song, silent. She hates me, I say. No, she love you. She don't know how to show it. And her love for herself and her love for Michael, well, it gets in the way. It confuses her. I wipe my eyes on the sheets by shaking my head and look up. Kayla climbs in my lap. Ma'am's looking at me straight on. Her eyelashes ain't never grew back, which makes her eyes look even bigger. And when Ma'am blinks, I realize we got the same eyes. Her mouth works like she's chewing, and she swallows and grimaces again. You ain't never gonna have that problem. While she talking, I want to tell her about the boy. Want to ask her what she thinks I should do about Richie. But I don't want to worry her. Don't want to put another thing on her when it's taking everything in her to bear the pain, which I can see now. Like she's floating on her back in an ocean of it. Like her skin's a hull-eaten hollow with barnacles, and the pain seeping through, filling, pushing her down and down and down. There's a sound outside the window, and the blades of the box fan cut it as it carries into the room, chopping it up. Sound like a baby crying. I look out and Richie's passing under the window, letting out one little cry and then gulping in air. And then he's letting out another cry. This one sounds like a cat yowling, and then gulping in air. He touches the bark of each pine tree as he passes up underneath it. Ma'am? After you, I can't bring myself to say it, so I talk around it. Richie moans. After, where you gonna go? Richie stops and listens. He's staring up at the window, his face like a shattered plate. Casper barks off in the distance, a series of high yips. Richie rubs his neck. Ma'am looks at me and startles like a horse. For her, this means her eyelids jump. Ma'am, you ain't let that dog get into my garden, did you, JoJo? She whispers. No, ma'am. Sounds like he treat a cat. Yes, ma'am. Kayla slides off my lap, walks to the fan, and puts her mouth on it. Every time Richie lets out a little cat-like yowl, she hoots back. She laughs as the fan chops it up. Richie gets up, hands still kneading his throat, and walks crooked and limping. Right underneath the window. After, ma'am, I say. What happens when you pass away? I couldn't bear her being a ghost. Couldn't take her sitting in the kitchen invisible. Couldn't take seeing Pop walk around her without touching her cheek, without bending a kiss on her neck. Couldn't bear to see Leonie sit on her without seeing, light up a cigarette, blow smoke rings in the warm, still air. Michael stealing her whisks. And spatulas to cook in one of the sheds. It's like walking through a door, JoJo. But you won't be no ghost, huh, ma'am? I have to ask even though I know the telling hurts her. Even though I feel like speaking's bringing her leaving closer. Death. A great mouth set to swallow. Richie is rubbing the screen, his hands sliding from side to side. Kayla giggles. Can't say for sure, but I don't think so. I think that only happens when the dying's bad. Violent. The old folks always told me that when someone dies in a bad way, sometimes it's so awful even God can't bear to watch. And then half your spirit stays behind and wanders, wanting peace the way a thirsty man seeks water. She frowns, two fish hooks dimpling down. That ain't my way. I rub Mam's arm and the skin slides with my finger, too thin. That don't mean I won't be here, Jojo. I'll be on the other side of the door, with everybody else that's gone before. Your Uncle Given, my mama and daddy, Pop's mama and daddy. There's a growl and a hacking bark come from underneath the house, from underneath the floorboards, and I know Casper's back and in the crawl space between the cinder blocks, a black shadow in the dusty dark. How? Because we don't walk in no straight lines. It's all happening at once, all of it. We all here at once. My mama and daddy and they mamas and daddies. Ma'am looks to the wall, closes her eyes. My son. Richie jerks away from the window and backs up, stumbling like an old man. His arms out in front of him, Casper saying, wrong, no smell, wingless bird, walking worm, back. I stop rubbing. Ma'am looks back at me like she can see me clear through the pain. Like she looked at me when I was younger and I lied to her when I got caught having a who can pee the furthest up the wall contest in the boys' bathroom at school. You ever seen something like that? Something like a ghost? Ma'am wheezes. Something you thought was strange? Richie's climbing the tree like a rope, gripping the young pine with his insoles, pushing, his hands flat to the feathered bark, inching up, swinging his leg around and sitting on a low branch, his arms and legs still wrapped around the trunk, the tree holding him like a baby. He yelps at Casper. No, ma'am. I ain't never have the talent for it, seeing the dead. I could read people, read the future or the past in their bodies, know what was wrong or needed by their songs, in the plants, in the animals, too. But never saw the dead. Wanted it so bad after Giffen died. Richie's yelp slides into a humming. He's singing to Casper, and there are words in it, but I can't understand them. Like language flipped inside out. A skinned animal. An inverted pelt. I can't help it. I gulp against the feeling I want to throw up all the food that I ever ate. Kayla's rubbing the screen like Richie did, back and forth, humming. No, ma'am. But you could. You could have it. The vision. Ma'am turns her head to one side, hearing Richie's song. A grimace. Like if she could move without pain, she'd be shaking her head no. Is there something outside? I shake my head for her. Casper whines. You sure? The blades cut Richie's song. I can feel every wave of his dark crooning on my skin. A bad touch. Leonie slapping my face. Michael punching me in my chest. An older boy named Caleb who sat next to me in the last seat on the bus and put his hand on my lap and squeezed my dick before I elbowed him in the neck. And the bus driver wrote me up when Caleb fell into the aisle, choking. All bad. No, ma'am, I say. I will not sink her.
Chapter 12. Richie. Riv hugs them even when he's not in the same room with them. Even when he's not touching them. The boy Jojo and the girl Kayla. Riv holds them close. He sees that they eat in the morning, oatmeal and sausages. He cuts little slivers of butter and slides them into the steaming insides of the biscuits he mixes and kneads and bakes. The butter melts and oozes out of the sides, and I would give anything to taste bread made with such care. I imagine it moist and crumbly. Kayla smears butter over her face, and Riv laughs at her, Jojo has food at the side of his mouth, and Riv tells him to clean it off. Then they go off to Riv's garden, where they pick strawberries.